The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Cyberspace is a place that only a human being locates, where there's so much information to take. Then you enter an entirely new page. Once you get on the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanley, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Zone.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
This song deals with freedom as it's supposed to be. Just one, just a minute of your time to listen to one thing I have to say.
You can be anything and everything you wanna be. You can see anything and everything you wanna see. You can go anywhere and everywhere you wanna go. You can know anything. Everything you wanna know, but it all depends on you. Yes, it does. Anything you wanna do, 'cause a long time ago, God made us to be. He made us one by one. Yeah. Anything we wanna be, said to be free. Everything you wanna do, you can prove anything and everything you wanna prove. You can try anything and everything you wanna try. You can buy anything and everything you wanna buy. God.
Professor Griff, you're listening to Junius Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griff from Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Welcome to another edition of the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. We started off the program with Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, featuring Teddy Pendergrass, To Be Free, To Be Who We Are. And we have several guests who are pursuing their inner calling to share their gifts, their talents, and their genius with the world. Rainey Williams, who's the author of The 10 Codes Street Ideologies, and also Cedric Perry, who's also a self-published author. He has two books in the pipeline. He's working on another, but he also has a lot of other activities. Very creative brother doing internet soap operas, internet talk shows. And so these young men embody the message in the music, to be free, to be who we are. We'll also hear from Yemi Odom, who is the founder of the Frater Haru Institute, and he's also deeply involved in black comic books and black artistry and promotion of black comic books. And we'll hear briefly from him, all on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, right here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. Stay tuned, we'll be right back. Hi, I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to join me in financially supporting the Blake Radio Network on a regular basis. We need your continuing patronage to help the Blake Radio Network remain alive and thriving both now and well into the future. There are several easy ways you can send your contribution. To use PayPal, click on the help link on the Blake Radio Network's website at www.blakeradio.com. Or you can go directly to the PayPal website and click the send money link. Type in rainbowsoul@blakeradio.com as the email address and Unlimited Ventures as the payee. Then follow the instructions. To send a check or money order, make it out to Unlimited Ventures, care of Neil Blake, and mail it to 73 Ireland Place, that's Ireland Place, Suite 109, Amityville, Amityville, New York, 11701. It's easy, painless, and uncomplicated. And you'll feel great after doing it, knowing you're keeping the Blake Radio Network alive and on the cutting edge of media technology. I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, thanking you in advance for your support. All right, we're speaking with Rainey Williams, who's an author. His new book is The 10th Code, Secret Ideologies. And it's a pleasure to be here with him. I met him several months ago. He told me it was coming out, so it's finally out. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how this book came about.
Well, I actually had ran into a dilemma in 2009 right after I graduated from Cheney, where I was incarcerated. And I was incarcerated for manufacturing possession with the intent to deliver crack cocaine. And in the midst of it, I was sentenced to serve 3 to 6 years. And while I was serving my time, I was so depressed that I followed these codes of the streets, which ended up being a mosquito that bit me in the butt. So I took every day that I was incarcerated to write about this book that basically exposed the illusion of the game, exposed the illusion that sucked me in and it sucked millions of other youth in into joining gangs and other types of things.
Now, when you say the game for squares and people that don't know what's up, what's that reference to?
The game is in reference to those that choose to live outside of living a normal life as a citizen. Those that choose to sell drugs, rob innocent people, kill innocent people. Those that choose to find another way to hustle to make money outside of what's right.
All right, now how did you get caught up in that? Because you said you went to Cheney. Cheney's a four-year college. You did well at Cheney. So that seems like almost like an oxymoron to be a college grad and then end up in the penitentiary.
Yeah, well, right after I graduated, I really, you know, first and foremost, my grandma was the reason why I actually came to college. You know, so when I had graduated, by the time I graduated, she had passed. And if it wasn't for my two mentors, Ms. Carmen and Mr. Larry, that convinced me to come back to school, I would have never came back to graduate. So after graduation, I really never had no plans to go any further. I was content with just having my degree. So once I graduated and the reality set in that I needed a job to take care of myself, it was hard for me to find a job because I didn't prepare myself as far as having any interns or having any type of experience. So it was easy for me to revert back to the streets because before college, the streets was all I knew.
Mm-hmm.
So after I graduated, it was like I heard that little voice on, you know, sitting on my shoulder like, you know, you need this money, so won't you come sell these drugs? So that was the road that I decided to take.
Now, once you made that decision, obviously circumstances resulted in you being caught and prosecuted. We had a conversation before we started talking about this. Part of it was due to misinformation. They thought you were somebody else in terms of a name that you were using. So do you attribute that to being caught? You know, if guys hadn't called you that name or if they didn't think that, you'd have made it a little bit longer?
No, you know, just like you said, in the conversation that we had earlier, I told you once I started hustling, because I was so much at the top of my game, everybody started calling me Rayful Edmonds. And because everybody perceived me to be this big-time drug dealer that's known worldwide, they thought that I was really a big-time drug dealer that was bringing all these drugs out to the small neighborhood, to the small county. But if I, honestly, it wasn't the fact that it was the name that got me arrested. It was the fact that the individuals that I thought were my friends out on the streets got envy of me and decided to set me up, and they actually were the ones that called the DA and put in the buzz that they actually knew who the so-called Rayful Edmonds was, and they ended up getting me, you know, they set up the actual mm-hmm. deal that set me up. Mm-hmm. They got me incarcerated.
So, you know, you spent 18 months in prison. You came out. I mean, it was rough. You were probably one of a few Africans. It's ironic, you were probably one of the few African Americans in that particular prison, from what you told me. So what are some of the lessons that when you look back on that period of your life and start reflecting on your life, what are some of the lessons you learned from all that?
Well, for one, that nothing great comes easy, you know. At the time, I thought that, you know, riding around with $10,000 in my pocket was cool, or riding around in the newest car was cool, or riding around with the Louis Vuitton and Gucci was cool. But in actual reality, that wasn't me. And you see, the reason why I say that the game puts out an illusion out there is because it doesn't just have an illusion to make you think that you getting past where you want to be. The illusion is that you somebody that you not. You know, a lot of us we grew up in situations where we're grown up in love, you know. But once you become a part of the game, you lose all that love, and it's nothing but hate. You know, it's nothing but negativity. So, something else that I learned was the fact that once you get in the game, the only way that you'll be able to make it out, unless you die, unless you kill the person that you are, into a new type of rebirth, a new type of maturity. You have to mature out of the game. You don't gain out of it. Money don't get you out of the game. The maturity gets you out of the game. The maturity of understanding that you killing not only your people, but you killing somebody else's mom, dad, sister, or brother. So,
well, that that realization, so when you came out, was there the temptation to get back in the game? Did some of the guys that you used to hang with who knew what your rep was, did they come at you to say, come on, man, you know, let's get back up and running?
Yeah, you know, and I talk about it in the book. See, once you become a part of the streets, it's like an addiction. It's something you can't just get out that easy. So when I came home, even though I just served this time and I just seen all this drama and negativity going on for the past almost 3 years, it was like I still had the urge because I still needed money. And you know, a lot of people in my generation, we want things right then, right now, you know.
But was part of it the fact that you were good at what you did? I mean, you had that kind of confidence that you could go back and do that again?
You know, when anybody that makes it through college and gets a degree, and then you go back out into the streets, and then after almost your first deal, you done made almost $40,000, of course, you're going to love it because you know that you're good at it, you know. Is most people that's out here that's not making $20,000 a year, and you done made it really after one flick. So of course, you know, it's natural to think that you're gonna go back out there and do the same thing. But when I came home, the first thing that I did was I had went back down to my old neighborhood and I told all the old individuals that I used to chill with that this is a new me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no longer Rayful Edmonds had died. This is the Rainey Williams. You know, and you know, I'm not taking that road anymore. And when I tell you I stick by it. If you see me under my shirt, I still have my state shirt with my state inmate on it. I'm with my state number on it because every day I want that to remind me that this is where I was, and at any given moment, if I make the wrong decision, I can end right back up there.
All right, now what prompted you to write the book? Was it being in solitary confinement, being in the hole? Was it something that was just passing through your mind? Was it something that compelled you? And there's something in you said, you got to do this?
Well, as you said earlier, the prison that I was in at first, the county that I was in, was in a white area. So
now, how'd you get from Philly there?
Well, I actually when I decided I was going to make that move and start hustling, I decided I was going to enroll in grad school and make it worthwhile while I was out there. So I went out there and got right into the grad school, and I was the only black inside the whole grad department.
Mm.
So I didn't have all I had to do was get my transcripts from Cheney sent up there, and they put me right into school 2 days before school started.
Mm.
So that I was also out there going to grad school. So when I got locked up, it was four floors. One floor was for the females, one floor was for the Bloods and Crips and Latin Kings, and the other floor was just designated for all whites. And you had to either be a part of rep the Ku Klux Klan or the Aryan Nation.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, they put me on the third floor with the African Americans, and I got into a couple fights. So then they said, all right, listen, we're going to put you right on the second floor, and that's where you're going to spend the remainder of your time. And when I got down there, a white boy threw a bag of shit inside my cell, and I didn't know how to take it. So naturally, I went out there and we started fighting. They took me out the hole, sent me back upstairs, and now they threw a couple urine inside my cell. Went right back out there and started fighting. So every time I came out the hole and I went back up on the block, I was being degraded.
Mm-hmm.
I was being degraded. So eventually I told the warden, I was like, listen, if you send me back up there on that block, I'm just gonna start fighting. So just keep my stuff down here. They thought I was playing. So eventually I had went up. They're like, come on, Williams. And I went upstairs. I just got out the hole. So I was like, listen, I'm going to just leave my box right here. And I went upstairs, sucker punched somebody, and came right back downstairs to let them know that I was going to spend the rest of my time down there. But while I was in the hole.
Now, when you're down there, did this get added time, or this is just concurrent?
At the time, you know, for a fight, all they gave you was 15 days in a hole, and you had to pay $5 for the write-up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they was really earning out of everything. Mm-hmm. But while I was down there, you know, I was in a cell by myself, and my brother had just committed suicide. I just found out that I lost my grandma's house to the city, and I couldn't get in contact with nobody that I thought loved me. So the suicidal thoughts started to come. And in the midst of the suicidal thoughts that came to me, the day that they were really like deep into my brain, the mail, I heard somebody come on the block and they said, "Mail." So I ain't get mail in almost 3 months. So the next thing you know, they came to my cell, knocked on the door and said, "Williams, you got a letter." I jumped up, and it was a letter from my mentor, Miss Carmen, and she was like, in the letter, she kicked off a little prayer with me, and she just kept on reminding, she just kept on saying, just to stay focused, stay focused, stay focused, and she was going to be there with me, and she was there with me, mm-hmm. And because I felt that love, I felt like I had something to live for. Mm-hmm. So by then, I already had probably 2 chapters of the book done, and the 2 chapters that I had done was Know Your Circle and a new snitching.
Mm-hmm.
So then every day I just was writing bits and pieces. But what I was writing wasn't geared towards the book. It was a journal of my life. And then so what happened was the journals eventually turned into the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you told me that Ms. Skinner gave you some feedback on what she saw, and she said you were too angry.
Yeah, the first manuscripts that I actually had that were handwritten were 100 pages, and they were full of nothing but hate.
Mm-hmm.
They were full of nothing but anger. I wrote it because that was my anger towards the streets. It was my anger towards the individuals that I chose to hang out with. It was my anger towards my family. It was my anger towards society. And it was my anger just towards anybody that came near me. So when I actually came home and my mentor and a few other people read it, they felt that it was so much anger, like all that was going to do was fuel those in the streets mm-hmm. to do even more mm-hmm. negative, mm-hmm. cause more chaos. Mm-hmm. So she asked me to water it down. So what I did was I had took 4 months that I just sat and I thought about what was the message that I wanted to give off. What was the message that I wanted to pass off to somebody? And that's when I decided that I wanted to attack the youth mainly, and I wanted them to see the whole illusion of the game. By then, the message was already there. It's just that I had to actually mold it into a message that can be that can spark a cause and change mm-hmm. in somebody's life.
Mm-hmm. Now, just from perusing the book, because I met you before a couple of months ago, then I saw you today, and I got a chance to just skim through the book. First of all, I was a probation officer, so from my perspective, it was like 3 or 4 rules. Number one, you can't snitch, you can't mess with the money, you can't mess with the product. So those are the main ones. You've expanded on the 10th code, so from living it, you dissected it, decoded it, and deconstructed it. So what do you want young people and people who read the book to get from it?
You see, a lot of us that grew up in poverty, that grew up with nothing, we're the main ones that get out there and we're the ones that got out there and created this so-called game, you know, and not knowing that the game was based off of negativity.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that you can be out here and expect anything positive, even going back to what you said with the no snitching. There's no way that you can be out here and do something negative and expect positive to come out of it. If you kill somebody, you can't expect somebody to show you some positive love and not tell on you because you done killed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You killed that little boy in the yard because if you killed a little boy in the yard by accident, by trying to shoot at somebody else, then you got to take ownership for what you did. You have to take responsibility for what you did. And with the book, I try to point out the illusion that there's no way that you're going to win. There's no way you're going to win. It's just because you made a couple dollars out of it, out of the whole process. Yeah, you probably got $10,000 saved up. But how much damage have you done to yourself mentally being out there trying to earn that money, watching out for the cops?
Mm. Yeah.
What have you done to your family? It does. You don't. The damage doesn't always necessarily have to be with you. It can trickle down to your mom, your sister, your kids. Somebody's being neglected in the process of you chasing this dollar, you know, and but the illusion itself is that you're going to make something out of nothing. Only thing that you can make out of nothing is knowledge that you're going to get by going to school and doing something positive. That's the only way you're going to ever gain anything. And a lot of young boys think that they don't need school. They think that they can get all the knowledge from the streets. Ain't nobody out there on the block going to take the time out of their grind to teach you how to read, or teach you how to do science, you know?
Well, but I mean, you know, one of the misconceptions is that people are not learned out there on the street. You can't handle money every day and not be sharp. You know, there are certain elements within the street, and you know that. But I understand where you're coming from, and the book talks about a lot of philosophical things, which I mean, this is a heavy book. You know, it's not just about the comings and goings of the street culture. It's very philosophical. There's what I call metaphysics in it. There's spirituality in it. And so, again, getting back to the question, what do you hope for folks to get from the book?
To really see the illusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like you said, like, see, the one thing that's a part of the illusion, everything that you said, that people are supposed to gain from the streets, you think you're gaining your mathematics. You're really cheating yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I didn't take science here and learn how to weigh my grams and my ounces,
mm-hmm.
I would have never knew that out there. But I thought that I knew it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that I knew it out there. When I first came, before I came to Cheney, when I was a juvenile, I was picked up off the streets. I had an old head, and when I was 12, what he did was he took me in. And he took me in his house, and the first time I was in his house, he was cooking up probably like a half a kid, and he was in there. And he was weighing everything up, you know, and he taught me the basics of how to cook up cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
He taught me the basics, so I already had that foundation. So when I came here, and I took home ec and I took science and they teaching me about the grams and all the types of weights of anything. And I thought what helped me learn everything fast was thinking about the streets. But then it was like I had to correct the learning that I learned, because everything that I learned in the streets about how to weigh the grams was wrong. So that's why I gained more when I was hustling, because I was cooking everything up and gaining more because I knew how to weigh out my product.
Are you saying after you coming through college?
Yeah, this is after coming
right.
through college.
Mm, okay.
So what college did to me was it gave me the knowledge on how to basically take the proper approach to the negative you know, but it wasn't meant for me to take it that route.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that when I reverted back to the streets, that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that you should come to college to get back out there in the streets. No, but it's just that I had ended up catching a bad break, that I allowed myself to fall into the illusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
See, that's the thing. The illusion with the streets is the streets are always want you to think that you have to come back. You don't have to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Once you make it, you'd have made it. It was right after I graduated. I could have called on my fraternal brothers. I could have called on the alumni. I could have called on both my mentor, Ms. Carmen and Ms. Alaire. But what I did was I took it upon myself to go back to the streets, because that was the easiest thing to do. Going back to the streets is always going to be easy to do.
Mm.
Why people, like, do you think hustling is easy for a reason? It's
well,
easy.
But see, I, you know, from my perspective, I saw people, they were on the corner 10, 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, now, if you had a profitable corner and you were rolling and you had a good organization, yeah, but to me, that's just like a 9-to-5. You just out there on the corner, rain and shine, you know, that whole thing. So what is the illusion? I guess because I was a square and could never really, and because I was in dealing with it on the outside from, you know, human service and quote unquote law enforcement, I never saw it as this glamorous kind of life. because I always saw what happened, and that's what I would tell the guys. Look, you're either going to end up in the hospital, in jail, or in the cemetery.
See, that's because, for the most part, when you're given a strong foundation,
mm-hmm.
and even if you, for some people that come from the hood, they somehow make it to get a strong foundation. Like, I had a foundation with my grandma raising me. And then as time went on, it got stronger. It got stronger. It's just that I chose to break my foundation.
Mm-hmm. Was it the peer pressure, you know, once you got to be a certain age in adolescence or, you know, looking back on it?
No. As far as me breaking my...
You personally?
No,
yeah.
I broke my foundation, as I said, because I was impulsive. I didn't want to wait. I didn't want to wait things out. I wanted things right there and right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I did what I did, you know. But the illusion is that you're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
The illusion mm-hmm. is that you can stand out here on this corner for 10 straight hours, and you're going to make $3,000 a day, you know, and that's cool,
mm-hmm.
you know. But in the midst of that three hours, say if you got a child. I mean, in the midst of all that time that you spend out on the streets, you got a child that you're neglecting. You got family that you're not spending time with. So even if you do spend an hour a day with your son, your son still sees what you do. Your son don't see you earning that money. How many times just think back in the day when individuals seen their fathers coming in the house after a back-breaking
yeah.
job.
Yeah.
They strive to be like that man because they knew that at the end of the day, he did it for his family. Nowadays, when you see their father, you know, and everything is, their father living this grandiose mm-hmm. lifestyle, mm-hmm. you know, from something that they're getting easy, it's like they strive for that. They strive for the easy road. You know, they think that it's cool. You know, a part of the illusion is like, and I listen to Jeezy, I listen to Jay, mm-hmm. I listen to Hov, I listen to T.I., Meek Mill, mm-hmm. I listen to all of them. But at the end of the day, they're still part of the illusion. Because the message that they're trying to give out, some of the messages are strong. Because sometimes the weight from everything that they're going through, it bleeds out every now mm-hmm. and then. You know, but the message, but 9 out of 10, the message that they passing off to the youth is that it's cool to be out here in the street.
Right, right.
It's cool to go grab that ratchet and bust that boy head off because he owe you your bread. It's cool to just go treat that girl like she's a whore because you can do it. It's cool. It's you that bull because you got money. You the man because mm-hmm. you walking around with $3,000 in your pocket. One of the issues that I address in there is this issue on being considered thorough. Nowadays, you go out there and you ask somebody, yo, what's thorough? Why is your old head thorough? They'll tell you, man, he thorough because that boy, he come around here all the time, man, and he be giving me $50. And he always laced up in his new Gucci and Louis mm-hmm. Vuitton. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he got a Benz. You know what I mean? Even though he sell drugs, he still come back here and give back to our community. You look it up. Thoroughness means completeness. Of soul, mind, body, mm-hmm. and soul.
Mm-hmm.
You not see nowadays.
So they missed the whole.
They
point.
Missed the whole point
yeah,
of
right.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, our youth are like shallow monkeys that are attracted to shiny things.
Mm-hmm.
The illusion is the shiny thing. You put a light bulb in a dark room. What the monkeys gonna do? They gonna stare at that light bulb. You know what I mean, and that's where we're at. But it's nobody. Everybody always coming up. And talking about, yeah, this is the problem with the streets, this is the problem with the inner community. But nobody never points out what is it that's drawing the kids to
mm-hmm.
to what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can say, yeah, it's because this is what they're seeing, but what is the actual illusion? What is it? You know, and a lot of, and kids nowadays don't want to hear no book terminology. In my book, in there, it's a section that I made. It's called the history section. And what I do is, I list all the top drug dealers that ever ever sold drugs in the United mm. States that became multi-millionaires from this
now,
game.
You're primarily, from what I saw, is primarily black and Hispanics, right?
Blacks and Hispanics.
Right.
Blacks and Hispanics. You look, everybody, and I put bios in there. You read their bio. Not one. Everybody made it and made millions of dollars. The Rick Ross is make. They said he was making $500 million a year. Rayful Edmonds, the real Rayful Edmonds, was selling. He was selling at least 4,000 kilos of coke a week. You have the infamous Ace Capone from Philly, which they said he was selling $2 million worth of cocaine a month. You have all these people that made all his money off the game.
Mm-hmm.
But why did they fall? Why did they fall? How many people you know in the game that stayed true to their word? How many? How many people, everybody running around talking about the no snitching, mm-hmm. no ratting. Mm-hmm. You know, you got people that's out there killing one another because they talking about some he snitched on me. Knowing that when you get locked up for that case, you gonna tell on somebody else, so you won't get the life sentence.
Yeah. Okay.
You know. All
right. Okay.
So the illusion is that everything is all good when it's not.
Right. Right. Now, how can people get the book, and where can people get the book?
Well, you know, you can go.
Yeah, I know it's brand new, but how can people get the book?
You can go to gettextbooks.com and type in either the 10th code Street Ideologies, or you could type in my name, Rainey Williams. That's R A. That's R A I N I E W I L L I A M S. Or and it should pop up. Or you can also follow me on Twitter. Under Rayful, R-A-Y-F-U-L, 2. And also, you can go follow me on Facebook under my full name.
Okay. Since this is brand new, obviously you don't have a website. So what are some of the things that you're going to do to promote the book?
As of now, I'm in the process of trying to get a bulk. And I'm teaming up with a couple of people where I'll be able to have a book tour and go around and give lectures before I actually present the book to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because for the most part, for me, I feel like if somebody explains something to me that they trying to sell me, you know, that I can really relate mm-hmm. to, then it's going to really make me want to buy it, and it's going to make me want somebody else to buy it,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, but you, in addition to being an author, you're a psychologist, and you've lived a life, so how are you going to use all of those things in your future? Because it would seem to me that you would be an ideal person. And the fourth key factor is you're young. So it's not like they would view me as some 63-year-old guy trying to rap to them, knowing, and, you know, just the fact that I was a probation officer, that would turn them off, you know.
Yeah.
But somebody like you who had been through it, and you could talk about the real deal, not the illusion and not the BS. So, have you flushed all that out yet in terms of how you want to put it all together?
Well, as of right now, I'm teaming up with a couple other positive brothers that I ran into, and we're starting up this organization called Blue, Building Love and Unity Everywhere,
mm-hmm.
where it's the same thing, and we're going to use the book as the foundation where we get to go back and we get to talk to kids and we get to pull them out of the streets. Kids that are at a high risk for homicides, you know, kids that's feeling the struggle, that's feeling the pain of being down in the city, are living in that house that's falling apart. Mom on welfare, bills, electric, gas getting cut off. You living in a house, and your cousin had to come over and turn on the gas,
mm-hmm.
and come over and turn on the water. So those are the individuals that we're trying to reach, that we can, you know, that's feeling that pain. And through the organization, we will be able to get the proper sponsorship on it, you know, where we can actually get out there. But as of right now, and I've been doing a lot of public speaking, where I've been going around doing my own thing, talking to the youth, and it's something that I have to do because mm-hmm. of the journey that I went through, you know. And my mentor, Ms. Carmen, I love her to death, and she tell me this all the time. My story is what's going to save a million kids, you know. And a lot of kids, they don't, you know, they hear it on a rap. They hear it in the rap. They hear people going through these struggles through the raps, you know. But they think that the rap is the only way to go out,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it's not, you know. We tell kids to get an education, but you know, there's nobody that actually went through the struggle that can tell you, like, I've been through it. I got shot at, I got stabbed, you know, I got jumped. You know, dude shot to bomb my house. Dude shot
people
my
stole
house
stole your
up.
Money and stuff.
Yeah, people, my best friend robbed me for everything I got. You know, there's nobody to actually tell you that they did this, that all this happened. But yet, I still got out, and now I'm trying to go back to grad school, and I'm living a positive, healthy life.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
how can people contact you? Because like I said, you don't have your website up yet. So how can people contact you?
Well, you can contact me through my email. RainyWilliams1@hotmail.com or R as in river, N as in no, R as in river, WIL4@AOL.com.
Okay. The book is brand new. It's called The 10th Code Street Ideologies or Ideologies. You have a chess, interesting logo on the front, graphics on the front. It's a chessboard. What's the significance of that? The game?
The chessboard represents the game. You know, while I was locked up, I was being taken care of by a brother. His name was Robert Ivory, a good brother. I mean, a very great brother from New Jersey. And at the time, he had 14 years in. Outside of that, it was another individual. His name was Lavelle Jones. Hoppo and a couple other people, you know, that was passing off this wisdom. But when I had talked to a couple of them about writing a book, you know, and I was struggling with what I was going to put on the book, I was like, yo, I'm about to put a picture of myself on it. They're like, no, it's, you know, if you're talking about the game, you have to, the game is what's challenging our youth to fail. So they said, just think on it. And then one day, you know, I was playing chess. Then I went in the house and got on the computer, and I had just lost actually, and it just was on my mind, and I remember I had to go in there and start and proofread one of the chapters, so then I figured, well, you know, we'll put the chessboard on there.
Okay. Well, it's good to see you hanging tough. I mean, it's not going to be easy, but it's good to see you doing what you're doing. So give us where people can get the book and the contact information, then we'll let you go.
Well, as I said, you can get the book at www.gettextbooks.com, and you also can go to google.com and put in my name, Rainy Williams, and then put in the 10th code and Google me, and it should pop up. It's a small website that should pop up through Google.
And you got Facebook too, right?
Yeah, and I have a Facebook. I'm under there as Rainy Williams, but my profile name is under Rayful. So that you definitely just make sure you get in contact with me. You know, for anything, advice, to come talk to the youth, anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, man. Thank you.
Right.
Stay strong, black man.
All right, thank you.
All right. Okay, I'm going to do this. It'll probably be up tomorrow or no later than Monday. I do a couple of shows, so I'll do... One will be up on the Cyberspace Sanctuary. It'll probably be up tomorrow. The other one will be done, but it probably won't get into rotation until next week. I won't send that in to them next week. So... But when I do the one on Blake, I'll send a Facebook thing to my people so they'll know what's up.
All right.
Hey, you can just pick me up and
mm-hmm. No, I'll give you my card. You. Okay. Well, you already have one. Give me your card.
Can I take a picture of y'all holding the book for me?
Mm-hmm. All right, we're speaking with Cedric Perry, another alum from Cheney, and he's another author. And the name of your first book is Homecoming.
Well, this is my second book.
Oh, okay.
Second book.
Right.
My first book was called In Line for Love. Wrote that when I actually just arrived at Cheney. It's from when I was in high school, basically. It was loosely based off my experiences. But
as a high school student?
As a high school student.
Mm.
So I guess this is the next transition. Written about another character from the suburbs, traveling to the jungle of the HBCU, and just his experiences going through manhood and
So it's like a rite of passage kind of thing?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, okay.
So yeah, this one, really proud of this, working on my next one called Late for Work.
Mm-hmm.
But
so now that's another journey. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. I love to write about the transitions of life. That's really what I feel a lot of people can relate to, and that's what I'm currently going through as a young man myself. So, yeah.
Well, how'd you get into writing?
I had a creative writing class in high school, and you know, my teacher asked me to write about some short stories and just our experiences. She liked my writing and said I should pursue it a little bit further, which led me to writing about In Line for Love, which actually ended up becoming published.
Well, how'd you do that? So what was the transition? Because you did that when you were in high school, right?
Right. So I had notified some of my family members that I was writing. They told me to check out some people in Maryland. That's where a lot of my family members are from. A company by the name of Publish America. Sent them my manuscript. They liked it and got talking.
This is why you were in high school?
Yeah.
Okay.
The work began while I was in high school. A little young, but I was definitely intrigued by the thought of being a writer. So, and by the time the process, you know, took over the summer, but by the time I was coming into my freshman year in 2005, you know, voila, I had a book.
Mm-hmm. So you primarily did the self-publishing route?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So
the first book, it was through Publish America, and I published through Author House. This is Homecoming. And the next book, Late for Work, I'm actually looking to get in traditional publishing.
Mm-hmm. A publishing house is looking at you.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So, and I know a few people. Hopefully, they'll do some good things, and we can make this work.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of other projects going on at the moment, so I haven't been as focused on getting that published. That's what's a little bit delay, but definitely a priority this end of this year. So,
now how? What does all this entail? Because when you self-publish, you don't have the publicity department, so you got to do your own promotions, you got to do
you have to do everything. you have to network, you have to call the people, you have to drive to the people, you have to, everything is your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, that's something that I've become accustomed to with not only my books, but some of my other film projects, because that's what I've been getting into now, but...
You doing documentaries?
Well, I'm actually doing sitcoms and talk shows right now. Currently, I have a web show. I do a lot of things on the web.
Mm-hmm.
A web show, Pick Six. It's a show that talks about everyday events and highlights 6 points about them, how to
come on
successful.
Every day.
Right. Well, we did it weekly. We're actually shifting to a college tour now this year for season 3. Going to be doing a college tour, Temple, Lincoln, Westchester, some schools in the South, Bowie. Morgan, a few other places that we're talking to, and we're going to compile that into a DVD. But I'm looking, that's going to be one of the big projects this year. I'm also, in the next few weeks, in mid-August, coming out with our web sitcom, We're Just Talking, which is basically about the black college experience through a comedy.
So you're actually shooting it on location somewhere?
Yes, we actually did a lot of filming at Cheney University.
Oh, yeah? Okay, yep. Okay.
So,
all right. So how many, is it like an ensemble kind of cast, or is it like one or two people?
Oh, it's an ensemble cast. We have, it's based off of the life of two college roommates coming from two different worlds.
Mm.
And there are connections through their relationships, through such great, you know, of course you meet girls and talk to all that stuff. That's all part of the experience. So yes, it is an ensemble cast, but... Definitely, as soon as I came together with these guys, I noticed the chemistry, and I think that we had something special.
So most of the people are local, or are they from Cheney?
A lot of local. We have some Cheney students, current Cheney students, Cheney alum, have some Westchester alum as well, but we have majority local products here, young, fresh talent, and I was pleasantly surprised by their performance.
Now, how are you shooting? Are you using... 35mm, video,
digital camcorder, multi-camera. We actually shot single camera for the first one, but going forward in the next episodes, we're going to use multi, you know, two cameras. And
so you have the lighting,
have equipment,
all that stuff, okay.
And while I would prefer to have more if anybody's listening, you know, want to add some funds, that'll help, but yes, we provided all that information.
Well, how do you monetize what you're doing?
Well, that's again, that's coming from me and from the funds that we raise through different events when we go tour. It's the show is sponsored from Pick Six Productions.
Mm-hmm.
That's my production company. The money that we raise through that show, when we go to different events, we get paid, or through the sales of DVDs. Mm-hmm.
So when you do your productions, like you do events, mm-hmm. you're an event planner?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we do events. Like, for example, we'll go to a school, we tour to different schools, high schools and colleges, mm-hmm. and they'll pay us to come out there and put on a show. We'll do a live show, live talk
mm-hmm.
show,
mm-hmm.
and those as well as sell some DVDs. They're saying fundraisers, you know, different, you know, event selling, candy, you know,
mm-hmm.
and all that other kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the funds come from to put on this production. I've also had equipment from other projects that I did. I was a photographer while I was in school, so I had some of the cameras
mm-hmm.
and the lighting
mm-hmm.
equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, might as well put that stuff to
yeah.
use while
mm-hmm.
it's still good.
Just hanging in the
yeah.
garage or closet.
Right.
Or something. Yeah.
So those are the things that help us out, and you know, through working and getting older, I've saved some money so I could go out and buy a camera and
mm-hmm.
you know, upgrade.
Okay. Well, how can people get the book?
They can go to Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can type in Cedric Perry. That's with a C, no K at the end. But they can go there. They can go to my website, picksixtime.com.
Mm-hmm.
They can find out information about there and purchase the book. And also, just I really want you guys to check out the show because.
Can you see,
like
can they see episodes or snippets of the shows
yes,
up there?
Yes, they can see episodes of Pick Six there, and the first episode of We're Just Talking is going to be coming out again in mid-August, so they can see that there as well. And we're going to be doing some other projects with local talent from Lincoln and other places,
mm-hmm.
the people that have their own shows, because we're trying to broadcast young talent. That's
mm-hmm.
that's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of young talent at historically black colleges and universities, and people need to know that, and that's a... It's a resource that,
yeah.
that hasn't been tapped, you know. And
well, the other thing
mm-hmm.
is more and more colleges and more young people are going into media and multimedia.
Right.
But there's only so many slots in the corporate structure. And with the internet, it's
right.
opening up a whole new
and you
vista.
Have to, you have
yeah.
to take advantage. We
yeah.
we like to call it Soulja Boy warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Basically,
mm-hmm.
attack them, mass media on the internet, get your buzz up, increase your buzz and your attention, your audience, people will notice.
Mm-hmm.
People will take advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Through the show, I've been able to get ad revenue from Pick Six because people have been watching the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sometimes
yeah, that's what I was talking about. How do you monetize all this? Because there's probably a somebody out there who's trying to get at the niche.
Mm-hmm.
That market that you're dealing with, and
right.
they just, you know,
what's up?
Yeah.
Well, we the things that we're doing through my travels and my experiences, I've met a few people always trying to meet more that are interested in finding a product, one that is going to be entertaining, but
mm-hmm.
two that's going to provide some type of moral value.
Right.
Because, you know, no disrespect to the reality shows and the things that are currently trendy, we want to give people different options.
Well, my thing is that the reality shows are creating a reality, and meaning the incivility, the whole notion that this whole promotion of materialism and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So that's you know.
But yeah, I think I don't bash them as much because they create a market for the things I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of sitcoms, of black sitcoms and white sitcoms, and by the reality brand being so prevalent right now, that allows me, for people that miss those sitcoms, man, I wish I had something to watch.
Mm.
They've seen all the episodes of Martin on TV.
Mm.
But they've seen Living Single.
Mm.
Let's give them something new.
Mm.
And that's where I come in. That's where my team comes in. And we're gonna hit them hard. I feel that they're going to enjoy our project.
All right, give us the website again and then any other contact information that you might
okay.
have that people...
Let's run down the list here. www.picksixtime.com. Number six. P-I-C-K, the number six, time.com. That's where you can find Pick Six and the new sitcom, We're Just Talking, coming out. You want to follow me on Twitter, follow me at Pick Six Time. You can also follow the show at We're Just Talking without the apostrophe. If you're on Facebook... go to facebook.com backslash weirdjusttalking, again without the apostrophe. Mm-hmm. Well, you can find us if you want to.
Okay. The book.
Homecoming by Cedric Perry, Amazon.com. All you have to do, search my name, Cedric, C-E-D-R-I-C, Perry. Can't put in Cedric, because Cedric the Entertainer will come up. Can't put in Perry, Tyler Perry will come up. Got to put in both people. But yeah, you can find the books there, both books, In Line for Love and Homecoming.
Okay. All right, man. Nice meeting you, man.
Nice meeting you, too. Okay.
Stay strong.
All right.
You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Stay tuned.
Our time is almost gone, but we did want to share this abbreviated conversation with Yemi Odom, the founder of the Frater Haru Institute, and he's also deeply involved in the promotion of artists and black comic books. So we'll hear this of the batteries were going down in the recorder, so it was, the sound quality is not as great as I would like, but stay tuned for Yemi Odom. Following that, we'll close out. And as always, we wish you love, peace, health, prosperity, wisdom, but most of all, power and courage. The courage to find meaning, purpose, and fulfillment in your life so that you actualize the divinity, genius, talents, and potential laying dormant within you. Till next time, stay strong.
Books, and also looking at how to improve the image of Africans in comic books.
Okay. Now, there was a resurgence of black comics back in the 90s, and then they fell.
Until about 98 or so, there was a movement to really create African or Pan-African characters, all walks of life. It's still going on, but that was a resurgence of it, because it first started in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of got normalized in the 80s, and then by 93 with Milestone Comics and folks who were doing work independently, those images resurged in the public.
Mm-hmm. Well, there were, you know, limited action with Marvel and DC, but then it seemed to me like in the 90s it was more self-determination,
right,
by the artists.
There was a lot of independent characters out. At least 25 independent artists had their own characters and or books and or short, you know, graphic novels.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so you help promote the artists and the whole industry, distribution,
right,
the whole bit.
We
How
had
can
our,
people get a hold of you?
Well, you can get us on our website, www.ecbacc.com, www.ecbacc.com. That's the best way. We had our 10th anniversary this year.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes our convention really unique is that everybody who's there vending, they're selling their own products.
Okay.
Most
right.
conventions, people sell other people's books.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Ours relies on people having their own work.
Right. The artists and the,
right,
yeah, the whole people. What's happening with the Frater Haru Institute?
Well, we're off for the summer helping our sister agency, Nubian Journey.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's
we're doing
that?
A five,
I'm not familiar
it's
with
another
that.
Nonprofit that does community-based education and research. And this summer they're doing a 501c3 class, math tutorials, rites of passage training. And then we're going to start up with FHI again mid-August for registration.
Mm-hmm.
For the
okay.
fall semester. Classes start early September and run through December.
All right. How can people get information about Frater Haru Institute? And that's number one. Number two, have you gone to distance learning? Because I think that's, you guys really need to look into that.
Well, we don't have so much distance learning, but
or internet,
they can contact
internet,
us
so.
Over the email, and we do lessons over email, but it's not like distance learning.
Okay.
It's
okay.
just periodic lessons with certain students.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we do the prison program for the most part, email and also correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
But to contact us, go to www.thefraterharuinstitute.org. That's T-H-E-F-R-A-T-O-R. H-E-R-U Institute, I-N-S-T-I-T-U-T-E.org.
Okay, and we've been speaking to Yemi Odom, and like I said, he's the founder of the Frater Haru Institute, the East Coast
Black Age
of
Comics
Convention, and any number of other activities going on in and around Philadelphia. So it's always good to see you.
Thank you,
and,
same
here.
Thank
keep
you.
Up the good work and stay strong, black man.
Thank you.
All right, man.
Great
talk
to see you.
All right, man. Good talk to you. Okay. All right.
Cyberspace is the place that no army with artillery can invade.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates. No denomination, faith dominates, and no court is going to try any.